This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Byte Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
You know it.
You know it.
You know it.
You know it.
You know it. Yeah.
You know it. 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 The marvelous Mrs. Maisel.
You know it. That's when you finally know.
You know it. The marvelous Mrs.
You need to call your ex-husband to rescue you.
Huh?
Just because you're a woman and your manager's also a woman.
Joel. Talking about Joel.
That's what soccer fans throughout South America said when he walked in.
Oh my gosh.
They say it for so long, and it's like they can't watch the rest of it.
Hey, I'm going to do an impression, and you have to guess it. And I think you can. It's a bit of a mashup. Okay.
Okay.
Midge, we have to topple the patriarchy.
Woke Joel.
Joel Soloway.
Joel Soloway.
Welcome to the marvelous Mrs. Maisel, guys. I'm Kevin.
I'm Alice.
Who are you?
I'm Alice.
You had to think about
I'm Alice.
And I'm Midge.
Oh, we are third co-host today. No guess, but we got a third co-host in the form of the problematic Mrs. Maisel.
Look, I'm sorry.
I'm sorry, too.
I don't want to do that anymore because I listened back to it and I was like, I can't handle this.
You didn't like how close it was?
I don't know. I didn't feel like it was close enough.
Really?
I kept hearing it and going... Yeah, it's not even anywhere near what I want it to be.
I think, if I'm being frank, I think the 203 with Trolley, the first time you discovered it was the sharpest it was. Mm-hmm. And then when we tried to recapture it, it was to varying degrees of success.
Yeah, it keeps veering into Woody Allen territory.
Yeah, when it's like whatever that first thing was, it was really, really good.
Mm-hmm.
So I say that to not discourage you, but encourage you.
Thank you.
Do you feel like you have, like, impressions that you crush, that you're just so good at when you do?
Yeah, but it's some of the ones that everybody's really good at.
Okay.
Like, that what Four Non Blondes song. I can do the Cranberries really well. Like, singing impressions are
singing
easier for me.
Which is funny, because I don't think that's obviously the case for everybody.
Yeah. I'm like a Melissa Villaseñor.
Mm-hmm.
But I have...
why don't you just sound like this when you talk normally?
Okay.
Then?
I can do. Who can I do? I feel like my Kermit the Frog is really good.
Kermit the Frog.
Everybody,
here.
Yours is good.
But what's yours?
Hey, I'm Kermit the Frog.
Uh oh.
Hey, you.
Oh no. I've done my sexually healthy Kermit for you,
I'm
right?
I'm Kermit the Frog.
No. Hi, I'm Kermit.
Oh,
no?
I remember us rapping as Kermit a couple years ago to Bad and Bougie.
Bad and Bougie.
Bad and Bougie.
Bad and Bougie.
Yeah. Sexually healthy Kermit's like, Miss Piggy, we can do whatever you want tonight. It's about your needs more than mine.
I'm good giving and game.
I want enthusiastic consent. I want to respect your boundaries. Yay!
All right. Everyone's confused.
Goodbye, listeners.
Goodbye, listeners.
Here's some ASP news.
Okay. Go for it. Here's some ASP news.
ASP news.
Beep, 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 beep. Coming on the wire. ASP. Welcome to ASPNN.com.
The Daily Top Hat reports that ASP is in talks to direct the movie adaptation remake of the musical Gypsy. She's reviving the musical Gypsy.
Ugh, and has it not been revived enough?
I'm into it. I think it's great. I think it's a first time movie for her. It would be terrific.
Yeah, there's no other movie. I mean, there are other movies, but like it's a great choice.
A complicated mother and daughter. It's a musical.
Yeah.
It's everything she wants. It checks all the boxes.
Yeah, I'm excited for her.
And imagining,
I don't know if I'm excited for audiences across America, but I'm excited for her.
I know. I'm wondering, like, what does ASP look
for
like
some
on
reason,
a silver screen?
Yeah, and for some reason, I'm thinking the budget. Like, so that's what I'm worried about. With now that we've had Carrie on talking about how the time constraints thing, now I can't unsee it. And everything I watch of hers, I'm like, oh, no.
It's funny, isn't
she it? She can't pace.
Here's a hot take, though. I would imagine that she would actually have less budget and control with the movie
than
she would
Amazon. Yeah, was a director, for sure, yeah.
Amazon's just writing blank checks.
Yeah.
For movie stuff, I'm sure there's like it's a lot more complicated than
and
that.
And I'm worried about her...
Personally.
No, I'm worried about her collaboration ability. As a director, you're really not... You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, she isn't really... Like, a writer, director, creator is a good role for her. Director. I mean, she loves the material, but she's going to be really attached to her vision of it. And, like, is it going to be a situation where she can find the right people to execute her vision?
I think if she's directing, she's probably writing it, too. Like, okay. I say, not the songs, but mm-hmm. I can't imagine a circumstance in which she would direct and not write. And even if she didn't write, she would, like, just change it all.
Anyway.
I couldn't imagine her directing... It's something more contemplative or different dialogue than hers.
Yeah.
Like, could you imagine Aaron Sorkin directing, like, a Nicole Holofcener script? Probably not. So she would have to do her own.
I can't imagine it.
Yeah.
I can't imagine it.
She's back.
So...
Did you watch the original Gypsy? Did you like it?
No.
Okay.
No. I couldn't get it out of the library when I was younger. It was always out.
Mm-hmm.
No, I've never seen it. I didn't watch a lot of musicals growing up.
Oh, boy. So that's some ASP news.
Boy.
Oh, boy. Wait, do you think, oh, boy, is my transition phrase?
Oh, boy. Yeah. Yeah, that's one of if you're not even in the studio right now, I just have a soundboard that I'm hitting.
Oh, boy.
Oh, boy. Anyway.
Your Kevin T. Porter dolls, when you pull the string, it does say, oh, boy.
Why is it a higher pitched voice than normal?
Oh, boy. Because it's a doll. It's got to be cute. Can't have this gruff masculine sound emanating from it. Shut up. This is what happens when we don't have a guest to mediate our conflict and be polite in front of.
It's not fair. We realize it isn't fair to the guests to mediate our conflicts. So this is where we're going to work it out.
And now it's not fair to the listener to have to hear it.
The listener knows that it was never fair to them.
I'm looking forward to it no matter the form it takes. Even if Melissa McCarthy ends up playing the mother role, which they said she's in the mix, but I guess they're saying that because she's one of the only bankable comedy actresses currently. As long as it's not Sandra Bullock or someone
Rose Byrne.
Who would you want in the ingenue role of that movie?
Ariana Grande?
No.
Maybe? All right, stop, Alice.
You're just thinking about Ariana Grande.
You know what I was listening to last night was that song from A Star Is Born. Shallow, you know? It's Lady Gaga singing.
Tell me something, Alice. Have you ever seen that movie, Malice?
Have you ever seen a big black phallus?
Oh, come on.
Or do you need more? It's like she's not good. Has anybody noticed that Lady Gaga? I didn't. Yeah, it was like her voice sort of sucks.
No, this is a take that doesn't have legs. It's a take, but it doesn't have legs.
I don't know.
Do you want to talk about the episode today?
Oops. Yeah, I do.
All right. This is episode 208. It is called Someday. I assume it's named after the song that plays at the end of the episode.
Can I do the Pop Goes the Culture song?
Sure. Yeah, can I read the synopses first?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the Amazon Prime synopses is Midge and Susie gear up for their first road trip and quickly learn that the dynamics of going on tour are more challenging than they thought. Back in New York, it's business as usual while Midge is away, forcing her to wonder if her new life is worth sacrificing her home life. I will say, that was my first time reading that, and I felt like I did really good.
I think you did great. You didn't pre-read?
I did not PR.
Do you normally PR?
Yeah, just because I'm copy and pasting it.
I see.
That one I did not.
That was beautiful.
I don't think I'm incredible at a lot of things, but one thing I think I'm pretty good at is like doing a cold read, and it doesn't sound like I am
basically run for president.
I'm floored by people who I think are smart people that then read something for the first time and sound like seventh graders who are getting held back.
I kind of like it.
Do you want to do the song?
Okay. I'm going to do it like Gaga.
Okay.
Oh, 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 oh. Pop goes the culture. Culture will pop right now.
That was great. Hey, lady?
Yeah.
So the segment is actually called Pop Around the Culture. Pop Goes the Culture was, I think, a different podcast altogether.
I've never heard of it.
So you can't do
I
another
can't
take
use
of
Pop
that?
Pop Goes the Culture? Okay. One
it's trademarked. Demi will sue our asses so hard. He will run
Demi,
us out of town.
Here's the thing. The listeners don't know this, but Demi is incredibly litigious.
He's incredibly.
I mean, he's got lawyers with briefcases.
He technically owns me.
For days.
He owns me. I'm an indentured servant to Mr.
Tichuipe. I one time said I was coming to one of his parties. I didn't go. He subpoenaed me. It was excessive.
This I actually believe.
He's litigious.
Oh my gosh. All right, 208 someday, pop segue, around the culture oh tonight.
Gregory Peck came in once.
He did.
Came in and ate lunch right over there.
No. Are you lying?
Never mind. Don't care. I love Gregory Peck.
Burgess Meredith plays us with a lot of pathos.
And Cary Grant joined him for dessert.
Oh, you never told me Grace Kelly was your friend?
I was hoping it would be like when Lucy went to the Brown Derby and saw William Holden and got so nervous she buttered her hand instead of her bread.
Magda Goebbels, ladies and gentlemen. Poisoned her dogs and all six of her children in honor of the Fuhrer, but now hiding in Manhattan and giving stand-up comedy management a go. Thank you, Magda.
It's Bags, not a threesome with Marilyn Monroe and Arthur Miller.
The Twilight Zone.
Never heard of it.
It's new.
I used to play with a Ouija board and try to contact Valentino.
I can never tell if they're talking about the boobs or the comedy.
That guy was a dancer in Pal Joey. He wasn't talking about your boobs.
And again, Susie spots. Oh.
Her gaydar is on.
That's what that is, right?
I guess so. Well, Susie's the more, she's the more counterculture.
She is so more counterculture sense. Generally, yeah.
But they did have that line
mm-hmm.
later just in the episode.
Dangling a little bit of the bait.
Okay, so we are both talking about the same line.
Yeah. Pal Joey, dancer.
No, we're talking about the line later in the show, which is like almost at the end of the show.
Oh, what's the line?
It's Midge's line. She says like, you were in the closet in this really pointed way.
You may be some kind of damsel in distress, but I'm not.
No, you were a damsel in the closet.
You know what? I didn't take that to... I thought about it for a second, but I didn't take that to be an inference at all.
I feel like it has to... It's such a... In the closet is like... You can't say it without having the inference. And so why say it in such a pointed way? You know what I mean?
Because I think they would truly love to deny all... plausibility of that being the case. You know what I'm saying? Like, they would use language like that and be like, no, we're just, you know, Susie. She's beyond, she transcends gender.
Yeah, right.
Like, I really don't think that's them being like, well, maybe. Like, I don't think it's that.
Okay.
I really don't. Right, and I think a lot of people probably did, but I wasn't among them.
Agree to disagree.
I thought it was something where it's like, it didn't feel like
so
Midge
me and the fans feel like it was, you are just out here on a limb.
This antagonism, this inherent antagonism. You want to pit people against each other. It's not healthy.
I do love to pit people against each other. It sucks. I should have kids, but I have to have two.
So you can teach them to fight to their death. That was a long extended reference to the Twilight Zone that Abe did at the baby shower. At Imogen's baby shower, where he tells the whole plot of one of the more famous episodes of Twilight Zone, with Jordan Peele coming on CBS All Access.
Wait, so he just was—he wasn't telling a story from his life.
No,
it was him retelling an episode of Twilight Zone.
Yeah,
huh?
He's like, "This is what happened. He's in the bunker. He comes out. His glasses are broken. He can't read."
Why is he acting like it's like this story that he gets to tell?
Well, that's what was confusing. The show opens with her. Doing her stand-up at the Gaslight. They've booked a little tour around the Northeast, Philadelphia, talking Pennsylvania, talking Harrisburg. And then she goes home and Abe is hanging out.
I have no time to concern myself with my children's feckless behavior. I'm a man of science, engaged in complex research at the highest levels on incredibly important scientific matters.
I went to the bathroom by myself.
Did you like that joke?
I liked it so much. And then I was so mad that it went on for this long. Who is this fucking Family Guy?
It is. You know who wrote this episode?
Seth MacFarlane?
No. Don't you wish, though?
No,
the
I
Orville.
Don't wish.
Hey, there is a Seth MacFarlane connection here.
Really?
Directed by Jamie Babbitt,
uh-huh.
Who's directed a an episode of The Orville.
Oh, right.
And Russian Doll in every TV show you've ever mm-hmm. watched at some point. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it was written by Kate Fodor. Mm-hmm. Not a Paladino script. First one of the season.
Yeah.
Not written by Paladino. So I was trying to look up info on her. She's a playwright in New York.
Uh-huh.
And she was on the first season as well. So she's someone that I guess they wanted to work with again. Mm-hmm. I mean, my view of the writer's room in a Paladino show is like inmates on death row and whose sentences are getting commuted and who gets executed.
Yeah, well, that's why somebody's coming in to write one episode as opposed to many episodes written by many different writers.
Maybe she helps with a story or something. Who knows? But yeah, this did have a distinctly different feel to me than a lot of the other episodes this season. This is the shortest episode this season. Mm-hmm. It clocks in at about 43 minutes. Mm-hmm. It is not a hefty... For a show, an episode that literally covers a whole lot of ground, it is shorty.
Yeah.
It's finally the comedy stuff that we've been jonesing for. Finally, they're going to get on the road, do the thing, do what we've all been jonesing for this whole time.
Yeah.
Which is like, focus on your career. Like all this Catskill stuff, it's kind of a distraction.
I'm happy that it happened. I'm mm-hmm. happy that this episode tackled those issues. But the early promise of a show about stand-up where we talk about, we see somebody grow as a stand-up comedian and what that entails and like how working with an audience and like the part where you're actually doing the stand-up comedy, that was the part that I felt like the first season was focused on more. And I was really fascinated by that because she was learning how to do stand-up comedy. And now it's like we're just all supposed to accept that she's a professional stand-up comedian who can make any audience laugh at any time. And thus, that's not the focus anymore. And the focus is now, well, how do we get this perfectly talented stand-up comedian to the Johnny Carson show? And it's like, it bums me out because the reality has always been that it takes 10 years to get good at stand-up. You know, like, people do get good in a year and people go on tour in a year, but, like, the audiences don't respond the way that they're responding. Like, you're not – nobody's actually good enough to do late night and tour and make, you know, become, like, a professional stand-up comedian after 1 year.
It's a TV show.
Fucking
– what? Like, here's what...
Yeah, but it's about a thing.
It's a musical comedy understanding of stand-up, which is to say it is broad, it is cartoony, it's compressed timelines at certain points, and it is not exact. It is not a documentary about that stuff, but...
I don't think it's excusable that way.
What?
I don't think it makes...
What are we talking about excusable, though? Like, is it on notice?
I don't
notice?
Think you can write it away. Like, I think that it's a I'm saying it's a major flaw, not like a thing where it's a product of the art form.
So you're saying that the right way to do the show would be to do it in the real time that it takes
it
to,
doesn't
like,
need to
struggle
be the time.
And...
It just needs to be rearranged. Like, it's just her story needs to be rearranged. She needs to be going up and doing those shows and... A little bit, it's like the guy could not pay her because the audience didn't laugh.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't need to be late, you know? And it wouldn't change the trajectory of what she's doing.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying. So it's almost like, so for a lot of these shows, it's frustrating when all the conflict is outside forces. So right now it's like this shiny jewel of mm-hmm. a thing, of this talented person mm-hmm. who's just like not being placed in the in the right places and in the right machinery. So it's like, how do we uncover this jewel and let everyone see the jewel?
Because right now I'm rooting for her to fail. I'm rooting for her to go on stage and bomb on Johnny Carson.
Just because
and
it would
I'd
be
go,
interesting.
Yeah, because you never, because every stand-up has the experience of killing it and killing it and killing it and thinking, oh, I'm a natural, and then going on stage one time in a weird circumstance and bombing and not understanding why.
Yeah.
There is not a single living stand-up who doesn't have that experience except for Midge Maisel.
Yeah, and I don't think that's going to change on the show, though.
So, fine. Let's have a show about doctors where they never kill a patient. You know what I mean? Like, it's crazy.
I know what you're saying, that it's like, because there's two conversations that are kind of getting conflated. One is like an accurate representation of a profession to which you belong.
Mm-hmm.
And seeing the stuff that they get wrong, it would be like, a priest watching a show about a Catholic church where it's like, no, it's not like that. And yeah. that's not the yeah. hierarchy. And you can't do that. And that's actually, that totally violates, like, what am I even watching anymore? Or like a medical doctor in the army watching MASH and be like, no, you can't set up a tent that way. So there's that concern to it. But then there's also just the general story concern of if your character is perfect and the
right.
world around her says she's perfect. And then, like, where's conflict coming? Is there an internal, well, like, oh, maybe I'm not as good at this as I thought I would
well,
be?
Well, to me, yeah. Well, I'm watching fine if it's magical realism, but, like, explain it. Explain why this doctor never kills patients.
Mm-hmm.
I want to root for her to fail because that's where characters learn and they grow. And she's not going to learn and grow from having just, like, I would never learn and grow if I was talented and amazing from the beginning and nobody gave me a shot ever, because I would be like, the world's just not fair. Like, but that's not the situation. Like, it was not good enough to do the things that I wanted.
I'd argue that she is losing in this episode, though. She's not winning.
Yeah, so have her not win. It's so easy to change it. That's what drives me crazy. It's like you get in a fight with your manager, you walk onto a show, she shoves you on stage, boom, that's when you bomb.
Right.
And then you fucking destroy? It's like, why? And then they
resolve. Well, because I think ultimately Paladino is more interested in relationship and not process. But that's been true from the jump of
everything. Yeah, but relationship, to say that someone who is someone whose job is to create things, it's like their relationship is with that audience. I don't know. It's just stupid to me. It's not hard to understand, I don't think. And if you have stand-ups working and being consultants on your show, it's not hard to, like,
to say, I don't care, I'm still going to do my story the same way. Like, of course they hired consultants. I don't know how much influence I want Jen Kirkman to have on the writer's room. But I don't know how much influence it had at the end of the day.
Yeah.
I don't think it's anything that's going to change on the show, though. It's always going to be like, this is
I know, but I don't think it's something that I need to, like, get used to enjoy it, because I can still watch it.
Right. No, I'm not telling you to get used to it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just saying, like, it's just, I think our expectations for the show are just different than what they...
I know, but when I'm just saying, if mine were set up differently, because in the beginning, when we were watching her, I feel like she approached the situation thoughtfully, or Amy did, and now it feels like...
I think 8 episodes into season 2, I think it's fair to say that season 1 was a little bit sharper. Mm-hmm. A little bit better overall. And it felt more rounded and paced better. There was less episodes.
Maybe better.
That had something to do with it. I guess just at this point, it's like we're entering into this moment of, like, surrender or not to, like, what we want the show to be. And it's like, I almost feel tired of fighting it. You know what I mean? Where it's like, no, do stand up right. And it's like, They're not gonna. They're not gonna do stand up right. They're not gonna give a damn about people of color. They're not gonna do Susie's right. queerness right. Like, it's not gonna happen. And there's a point, and I've thought this on some of our past episodes, where it's like, I don't wanna have the same conversation 20 times and devolve into just, like, you know, like, backseat driver grumps about everything. Cause there are things that are very wonderful about this show. But it's like, I don't know how many times I have to make peace with the fact of, like, they're not, you know, make Susie gay. Like, yes, I want it. Like, and we've talked about it. But I don't know how many more times we can talk about things like that without testing the patience of our audience with that stuff. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Where it's like, yeah, like, we all agree that that's the issue. It's not going to happen. And this is like, you know, this is like the way... This is what happens when you invest into.
And I think it's fair to say it hasn't happened yet, you know. And when it does happen or doesn't happen, is when we will get to it. And what we're doing now is covering what is there, and I think that's okay.
Yeah,
I feel like we're like Bob Garfield and Brooke Gladstone on the media talking about Trump getting elected right now. I'm like, what's our role? You know,
I'm Garfield.
What's our role as dissectors of media? What's our role as Amy Sherman Palladino media coverage people to talk about? And I get what you're saying. I guess I just wanted to make that point about what. It is a backseat grump, and there's no reason to go into it again. But
no,
I just want to make that point.
Totally, and I think it's all valid, and it's not even something I, like, particularly disagree with point by point, but it's just something that, like, once we've talked about it, I don't know how many different ways to say it. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Where it's like we get more evidence of this happening or not happening in certain ways. I don't know how to make it new mm-hmm. in a conversation where it's like, oh, this is something we haven't explored before.
Right.
Because at the same time, like at the end of Gilmore Guys, where I was like, I don't know how many times I can say, like, Rory's too privileged and Lorelai's a jerk, and like,
yeah,
and I did feel like I was like losing my mind,
yeah,
with that stuff to a degree.
I understand.
Where it's like the revival stuff, it's like, oh, that was interesting, because like, and I always think it's interesting on a metatextual level because those things actually are more dynamic than mm-hmm, than right. what is in like the narrative text. Like, I just don't know how many more times I can dissect that. Although it is interesting to see like the new stuff, especially doling it out week by week in the way we've been watching it,
mm-hmm.
to see like what does confirm our previous expectations or biases,
yes.
or doesn't meet them.
Yes.
It's interesting, which it's like, man, like other shows I've binged, I find myself enjoying more but thinking about less. Do you know what I mean? And so it's like, what is enjoyment? It's like that
same conversation.
That kind of question we keep going back to,
right?
With all that stuff. With this episode, it's like, all right, you want comedy story on the road, doing your time, you know, paying your dues, you got it.
Yep.
And there's so much of it that does line up with, you know, like, yeah, the dues paying part of it. You're in shitty hotels and there's cockroaches everywhere. Yeah.
Cockroaches.
But all the losses. And here's what I think is one of the more salient points, and kind of getting back to what you were saying, is that when she loses on the road, because this is the episode where it's like, oh, it's not all breezy. Like,
mm-hmm.
they're staying in shit places and the venues are bad, but all the losses are still external. Mm-hmm. It's never performance issues. It's like, I was killing, then there was a fire in the kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to kill, but there was only three people in the crowd. I was going to kill, but then the club, the bar was closed. So it's always someone else's fault in some way.
Right.
In an interesting way.
And it really bothers me when... it just was so awesome to watch, and it's such a realistic, deep portrayal of a relationship when you have the character of Midge doing poorly on stage, flailing, and not understanding why whatever is happening is happening, and Susie going... no, you're amazing. Calm down. This is what it is. It does. I feel like that does plug. I mean, I feel like that does generate more interest in their relationship for me. And it also gives Susie more depth, and it gives Susie more authority, and gives Midge more character,
mm-hmm.
you know, to see her learn that she's not amazing always, all the time, in every realm. She's amazing. She's the funniest person among her friends. Like, I would love to watch the woman who's the funniest among her friends go through what it takes to be funny on stage.
When's the last time that she kind of ate it?
Like, season one, episode
two? Was it when she was doing Wallace Shawn's cards?
Yeah. And it wasn't even her writing?
Again, it was like an external thing where it's like, see, you didn't just do your
But there was a set on season one where she was not
doing
well, but it wasn't bad. It was like middle of it. That was fucking amazing. I thought that was so great. And then she kind of ate it at the wedding when she got really drunk, which was cool. You're not supposed to be doing stand-up now. But
But you know what?
To me, I'm like, I'm watching that person at the wedding who's that big of an idiot that they think they can get on a stool and go and say this ridiculous shit. I mean, you better be fucking tanked to say that stuff at a wedding. And then... that same person is so good at stand-up. You know what I mean? It's just mm-hmm. like, it's so jarring to me. It's just like, doesn't make any sense.
No, I know what you're saying.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Susie, in this episode, I thought was an interesting case study of what do you want to do here? Like for the writers and for Palladino, there's so many places where I thought she was going to zig and she zagged in terms of like reaction and response. It's almost like, and I don't know if like the woman who wrote this episode had that much agency over like the story beats of like what Susie was going to do. But one, I don't even know how great of a manager Susie is in this case. I mean, I guess she's learning on the job, but like not getting the money when they need it from that last club and not knowing about certain hotels or motels ahead of time. And just like little things where it's like, okay, what's the expertise or the value here? She records all her sets, which is great. It is the 1959 equivalent of the voice memos on your iPhone that you would put on your stool doing your 5 minutes at the Virgil or whatever. It was interesting to see how she just kind of got flattened out in a way.
Yeah.
Like all like relationship queerness conversation aside, she just kind of got flattened out to like, you know, she's kind of gruff and she's there and she's less feminine than Midge's and kind of a pal and bugs bite her face. But what I did like is that there were all these like little interesting beats of a friendship and relationship between the two, which she always fights against, but then they find themselves in them. Like the part where they were talking right before falling asleep in the dark.
I remember when that really old lady was yelling, "Take me, I'm on fire," at the fireman.
Yeah.
And the fireman threw that blanket over her. For a minute, I thought he was going to do it.
Give the old bird her dying wish.
Take me, I'm on fire.
You should put that shit in your set tomorrow.
I'm opening with it. Did she die?
Nah.
Maybe in the actual die. I think I could keep that funny. Night, Susie. Hey, Susie.
What?
She wanted to slide down his pole.
Go to sleep. Pole's funny.
That reminds me of like going to camp or going on trips with friends where like everyone's asleep in the same room and all the lights are off, but people can't stop talking to each other and everyone starts laughing at each other and just kind of like that giddiness. It reminded me of that stuff. So that, or when they do, you know, snap at each other because there's no dressing room and then they apologize to each
other. Sorry about the room.
Sorry, I yelled about the room.
Let's do this. Yeah.
Like, that stuff is great. Like, that seemed to be...
That scene was... Yeah, that was good.
That seemed to be more the purpose of this whole episode. It wasn't like... And now Midge learns, you know, the ways of the road, even though it was, like, continually diminishing returns on, like, the greatness of the venues and stuff. But it seemed to be more about, like, the escalation and intimacy between the two women.
Yeah,
which then makes the way the episode ends all the more kind of puzzling from a story perspective.
Totally. Yeah, right? Absolutely. I agree with what you said about Susie getting flattened out. It, like, to get this character we all love so much into a space where we can really examine, and this relationship that we love so much, give it so much space, and then have it be just like, honestly, I would say pretty like a tedious bickering for most of it. I don't need that. I'm not here for it. Like, I was just like, we have to see Midge like fail and get to understand what comedy is, because at a certain point, you know, rubber meets the road and we're going to see that being a stand-up comedian isn't all that it's, you know, it isn't all this glamorous. Like, I get on stage and everybody loves me. And I like that. I don't know if we needed the car situation and like every aspect of Susie's managership to be a disaster. Like, I don't know why that had to be like that. Like, it was just like... Who cares? Like, you know, obviously the car could be, I feel like the car could be not to Midge's liking while still serving its function.
Right.
You know what I mean?
I think it was all painting the picture of like, not so much like she's bad, but just like it's real scrappy. Like it's real scrappy the way they're putting this together.
Yeah.
And it does call into question like, could Midge not take out a loan from her parents? And
yeah. Well, like then I guess I'm just saying like we didn't need to make Susie be horrible at her job for this to be a dues-paying scenario, because Midge thought the motel guy was going to get her bags. She doesn't understand what it's like to not be a rich girl. So it's very easy for us to have comedic, hilarious things where Midge is getting a an attitude without it being a fucking disaster every step of the way upon and on Susie's shoulders. That's one thing. I don't know. The bug bites thing bothered me, and it's just because it was gross.
It was real
every time
gross,
they
yeah.
do something like that to a woman, it's like, why? What are you doing?
There was some gross stuff in this episode.
Yeah.
I mean, there was like the kind of the I go to the bathroom all by myself joke with Abe, whatever. That's like, you know, pretty tame. But then they're doing like hard shit jokes
yeah.
in the show where Midge finds an unflushed turd in the bathroom.
Yeah.
That then
and we
Susie
think it
has
was
to
a turd.
Yeah, or whatever it was. Yeah, the size of that thing. And then, yeah, she.
I liked Susie, and that was a little bit of a turn, too, because Susie was like, hello, like, the way she talked to it.
Yeah.
It's really cool. I don't know. Like, I love, it's like, it's Susie's so hard to not like, and this episode gave me a lot of opportunities to not like her, and it's almost like they had this great character who's so rich and so, like, we get her motives, we understand her struggles, we root for her every step of the way, so let's take her and beat her the fuck up, and let's make it so that she can't get anything right. Why? Like, we don't need that. That's not she already has the hero's struggle. Mm-hmm. She already has the shit in front of her that is really hard to do. Get this privileged little princess on the road and get her to her shows and make her understand what to do. Like, that's already there. We don't need to have these extra bullshit things, you know? It's just like, I'm not going to do this again. I'm sorry. I know you're getting sick of this conversation, but like, I struggled as a stand-up getting good at stand-up. I didn't struggle as a stand-up having to stay in gross hotel rooms very much. I was 30 years old. I knew how to travel. Like, I knew how to book hotels. I knew how to fly a plane. But, like, I knew how to get from point A to point B without, like, getting covered in bug bites. And I just know the realities of my situation. They're getting it so lopsided.
Where it's like,
it doesn't need to be lopsided.
You would have killed to have been as amazing as Midge and stayed in shitty hotels.
Exactly.
And they're like, this is the struggle. And yeah, in real life, it's completely the other way.
Yeah, and so, and also, and the main reason I have a problem with it is because, like, I don't want Susie to get fucked with this much. You know?
Sure.
Like, at the
end of
the
day, Midge can learn a lesson.
Like, why does she have to get screamed at by Joel?
That was okay. So that,
what the fuck is that about? And she's like, cool.
I want to talk about that.
Now listen, and you listen good. I swear to motherfucking God, if anything happens to Midge on this trip, I'm gonna fucking kill you.
I don't care that you're a girl or short.
I will rip your head off and use it to play catch with my kid.
She's the mother of my children. If you fuck this up,
I want you to think of the worst possible thing that could ever happen to you, and I want you to triple it and add a hobbling.
Okay, so all of that is like the continued redeeming of Joel Maisel in season two.
Yeah.
He was a schmuck in the first season, so to speak, and now he's like, he's on board for Team Mrs. Maisel. He's championing her, Yom Kippur. No, she could be really great. I think she's going to be excellent. Like, he's a cheerleader for her. And this was something where I thought it was going to be game recognized game.
Mm-hmm.
So he's talking to Susie in a language that she should understand, right? Like, he cares about her a lot. And he's
right.
like, I'm going to kill you if, obviously he's not going to kill her. But he's like, using language, I'm going to kill you if you blah, 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 blah. Which to me, if I'm Susie, that would communicate like, oh, he really cares about, like, I know their marriage
right.
is real effed up, but he really cares about her. And I thought the takeaway from that, I thought the story beat was going to be like, you know what? Joel's all right. Like, I thought that was going to be her reaction to Midge.
Right.
It's like, he was so harsh with me, the way I'm harsh with everybody for you.
Right.
That we're actually,
knowing
we want
Susie,
the same thing. Yeah.
Knowing Susie, also, would she have sat there and let him talk to her like that? Like, she would have been like, are you done?
Yeah.
Okay, here's what I'm going to do to you. If blah, 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 blah. If you fucking fuck this up for me anyway, and then get off the phone and go, I like this guy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, but then she just
she just goes awkward and walks away from the phone. I thought it was such a missed opportunity. I know it's a little nitpicky, but it just felt like, again, it's like, what are we doing with Susie?
Susie was like, okay.
Well, that just happened. yikes. He's right behind me, isn't he? So yeah, that was a strange one. And
also, I thought it was, like, really needlessly violent.
It was, yeah,
like,
it was pretty
I'm
wild.
I'm going to kill you. I don't care if you're a girl. Weird. Why? Okay.
For leaving town with her. That was it.
So strange.
That was all.
And then it's so weird that like our hero girl is over and like being like, everybody okay? Like, what the fuck is going
on? Yeah. Here's where the story gets into, because then Imogene, as played by Bailey DeYoung, is pregnant because she was pregnant in real life when shot this. Yeah. She had a beautiful little baby she posts about on Instagram a bunch. So shouts out, Bailey.
Shouts out.
And so they make her pregnant in the show, and Midge misses the baby shower that she was going to throw for her. And she forgets about it. She talks on the phone with Abe, and then she remembers it and then calls. And then, like, a psycho is demanding to be on speakerphone to apologize.
I have no excuse, and I want everyone to hear it. I am a terrible person, but I want you all to know I am sorry, and I love my friend Imogene.
You're not a terrible person, Midge.
I am. I am terrible, and I just have to live with that.
But I hope you like the cupcakes.
I did.
So that's her not being awesome at something. But again, this is the evidence. This is like where the interest of Paladino lies.
Yeah,
for sure. The flaw is personal.
Yeah.
It's not professional. It's not, man, I really don't have my timing down and I got too cocky at that last set. So now this set's blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
It is, I neglected my friend, you know?
So interesting. So it's like Amy is unable to write, okay, it's blowing my mind now. Amy, unable to write a correct narrative of what it looks like to struggle professionally, right?
Okay.
Amy, this is because Amy is unaware of her own inability to do that writing. So Amy's like, why would I ever write about somebody struggling professionally? I've never struggled professionally. And everybody's like, you are struggling professionally because you can't write this. Ooh. But it's like chicken or the egg.
Chicken or the egg, baby.
My God.
I mean, I guess if you go back to Bunheads, Michelle was kind of struggling in her career. But on Gilmore.
I guess if you go back to Bunheads, Piggy, Michelle was kind of struggling in her career.
No, the thing about Bunheads is that there was Sasha. There
it's
was
like
Boo,
you're Woody Allen.
There was Ginny.
It's like your Kermit is a lot like Woody Allen.
Now, I'll tell you, I saw a little Piggy in there the size of a Buick. I hear it now. But on Gilmore. Lorelai didn't really struggle with the dragonfly,
mm-mm,
right? It's like she opened it, boom, crushing.
Yeah.
24/7.
Yeah.
Because
I just want to design hotels and nail it. It's a Kanye.
That was a classic.
A Kanye
season
lyric.
Six quote. I just want to design hotels and nail it.
I just want to design hotels and nail it. That's Lorelai.
Now, listeners, should Alice be canceled for doing an impression of Kanye?
Question. Posing a question to the listeners, and the clock is ticking.
Yes.
Because my special is coming out in May, so we have about
In a very special
a month and a half.
Can you
to
tell them
me
how it's coming out yet or no?
I don't think I can.
Okay.
I don't know.
Because it'd be
so
a fun little, anyway, yeah, we'll see.
It would be
later.
A fun lil.
Yeah.
But that's even, maybe they're even more interested now.
Mm.
Because we're saying it as though it's something we can't say yet.
See,
so
we're hyping it
cool
up. I can't wait to see it. I haven't seen it. I haven't seen a frame of footage from this
is
thing.
Is that true? A frame of footage?
No.
I can show you a frame.
Okay. Yeah, when you invite me over for Smash Bros and Nachos.
I'm grabbing my nuts right now. I'm like, this is your frame right here.
Yeah, I'll show you a frame along with some chos and
all
some
right,
bros.
When I get back from New York, you're going to come over. We're going to have nachos.
That's what you're leaving for the next 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm going to do shows in New York.
Oh, nice. So anyway, that it is the personal flaw that she was not there for her friend. And it is kind of the premise set up by Declan. I almost said Declan McManus, which is Elvis Costello's real name. Declan Howell in the last
episode.
Which is
good that they followed that, and they didn't just drop it.
So it was like you pursued this, and it definitely wasn't glamorous. Also, by the way, in that clip I just played, you heard a little clip-clop in the background, because while Midge is on the payphone, there's just a horse pulling a carriage in the background on this show.
Right.
So much money. There's no story reason.
That's
for
true.
A horse.
I thought she.
Pulling
you
a
know
carriage.
What? They probably cut it out. She always said, "And there's a horse here." You know what I mean? They probably had like a joke about her having, like, you know what I mean? That they cut. Is ideally.
They probably cut a scene where Midge and Susie go over to the horse droppings. They're like, "Yeah, that's what was in our hotel last night.
Right.
Must have been the horse."
Or they cut a scene where Midge and Susie go on a romantic horse ride through Philadelphia.
I stan. I literally stan.
I literally stan.
Two queens.
I'm dead.
Literally dead.
I've died.
Really glad to be back in New York City, my home.
They get back
I
to New York.
Friends. who hate me, so much family who are disappointed in me, where my children live until they abandon me. That's why New York's so great, though. Everyone you care about can despise you, and you can still find a bagel so good nothing else matters. Who needs love when you got locks? They both stink, but only one tastes good.
Hey, happy Valentine's Day.
Needs love when you got locks? They both stink, but only one tastes good.
Hey! Still not as good as 203.
You're right.
But I say that to encourage, not to discourage.
I understand. Everything. You're like a Romanian Olympic gymnastics coach.
Exactly. Well, I feel the same way with you. Every time you say something to me that I think is really mean, I'm like, I'm encouraged to get better from this.
You better be.
And the club owner refuses to pay them. Stuffs Susie.
I love that club owner, by the way.
That was a good actor
so,
for the time period.
It was
period,
so,
right?
Like, yeah, it's like, it's almost as if club owners have never, they're like book, not owner, he wasn't the owner, he was the booker.
That's right, because it.
Yeah, that middling guy who's a holding on to his power, it's like, oh, this guy has not changed since 1956.
Yeah.
Like, I've met this guy 100 million times.
He's a cockroach of a different sort.
Yeah.
Yeah. They try to get the money. Susie is stuffed in the closet, which may or may not be a metaphor.
Mm.
And then Midge calls Joel, and Joel comes and saves the day.
Now pay them.
She was late.
10 minutes.
Doesn't matter. Pay her what you owe her.
So you're her manager.
Pay her
I'm
what
her
you
manager,
owe her.
Ricky, you know that.
So who are you?
What's the matter?
I'd like to know who I'm talking to.
I'm her husband.
Her husband? Well, why the fuck don't you keep her?
Joel!
Wherever that sentence was going, it was going to end up like that anyway.
Whole new light, pal.
Now pay her what you owe her.
Fine.
And Joel takes care of business.
The one thing I liked about that scene was that Susie says, like, starts to like him a little bit.
Yeah, she takes
like, it
shine,
made it
yeah.
kind of okay that Susie was into it, that mm-hmm. Susie was approving of the muscle coming in. It's a knight in shining armor moment, which fucking sucks for our story. Puzzling, weird, doesn't make sense. Why? But also,
you
it
wouldn't
is,
be into this 19- as a Joel stan?
I'm into it as a Joel stan, but like if I'm loyal to Midge's story and to Susie's story,
yeah.
then this is a terrible way of bringing Joel in to the fold. It's not like he's helping solve a problem. He's saving the day, you know? So that's not what we need.
In a big way, yeah.
And if anything for our actual story, if it does help Susie respect Joel, that's good. But the power has shifted so much at the end of this episode to being in Joel's favor that, like, who cares if Susie respects Joel? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Susie is the go-between with these bookers now at this point.
I didn't see her manage a lot in this episode.
Mm-mm.
And I wanted to see that. But for the most part, it was just like Lucy and Ethel shenanigans with her and
Midge.
I
mean, there's also a way for them to not get stuck in the closet or them both to get stuck in the closet. Or there's a way for Susie to have called Joel.
Yeah, or for Susie to punch the guy out or something.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, there was like 10,000 solutions, but this is all setting up. It's Christopher, man. It's Christopher getting called by Lorelai, like,
it's Christopher,
hey,
man.
It's Christopher,
yo,
man.
It's Christopher,
it's
man.
Christopher, he comes, he saves the days.
Christopher.
The whole thing. And I guess for people who love Joel, great. Like, he'll definitely be a part of season 3 in a big way, I'm sure. It is not the most interesting path that we could have taken.
No.
In this. And she comes home and Rose is a real jerk to her.
How was Pennsylvania?
Mama, what happened?
What happened? There was a baby shower. Did you forget again?
Ouch.
Should we have you checked out by a doctor?
Bitch.
I wrote down, yesterday. Rose is a bitch. I
mean, where's Zelda?
Zelda? Oh no, it's your mess. Good night.
Then I was like, do I like Rose? Maybe
yeah, right?
I hate her.
Yeah, right?
Because she is mean.
Yeah.
In this episode, which maybe that's where Midge gets it from. It's her mother's cutting wit. Should we have you checked out by a doctor? And I know that tone. I know that tone so well.
You
friends
do.
Of mine have used that tone with me. Not you, but other friends. I remember driving home.
Aren't I your meanest friend?
Explicitly, but I think there's people in my life who are meaner over time in a way that like has a the larger cumulative weight than
the important thing is that you're surrounded by people that treat you poorly. That's what matters to me.
I think so, good. Yeah. And I think that's why I find myself unable to commit to anything at all. But I have this memory of a friend driving us home from a wedding reception where she had too much to drink, mm-hmm. but she had to drive us home because we were out of town and it was a rental car. Mm-hmm. And we were like, no, can one of us drive? She's like, no, I'm driving. And it was the same tone as Rose. And I remember at one point she was like speeding like 15 or 20 over because she just wanted to make good time. And one of the girls in the car was like, can we slow down? And she said, how fast would you like me to go?
Oh, my God.
Just like that in a Rose Weissman type tone. And it flashed back to me
to
that moment listening to that stuff. We made it alive.
No, I'm glad you're alive.
I'm kind of glad I'm alive. That was 3 years ago.
I mean, can't beast, too. Yeah.
3 years ago, my death would have been tragic.
Ooh, true.
You know, now it's like...
Oh, crap.
Yeah, right? Especially the closer you get to 30.
Dude, I'm 37. People
I know.
Would be like, so young?
If you died now, it would be like...
So young?
It was a tragedy. do you want to do some Twitter Q&A?
I do.
Okay.
I even responded
tweet,
to
tweet.
Some already.
Tweet, tweet. I know. And did you see my cutting response back to you? You responded to it so sincerely on Twitter. I just said, Alice, we're not recording right now.
Oh, you bitch. You little bitch.
By the way, we didn't really talk about the flattening of Susie in this episode, sure, in terms of like the role and stuff that she's supposed to have in Midge's life. Mm-hmm. But also, there are some nuggets dropped about her backstory that are truly alarming. In this episode alone, we find out that her cousin climbed on top of her while she was sleeping.
I know.
Maybe that's a sexual assault reference.
For sure.
She used her imagination to go on vacation was something she said at one point, that her mother read her the Book of Job on every birthday she had. So
Jesus.
She had some effed up stuff going on.
I think that
she was a kid.
Getting on top of her thing was definitely a sexual assault.
Which is a bummer that they would just gloss over it. So like that was just like a beat.
Yeah. But I think that's like, well, to me, I feel like that's more a statement of the times. Where it's like, in the 50s, you would gloss over a sexual assault all the time. Mm. And it was not a good thing.
Like the way Midge was talking about how she handles gropey men at mm-hmm. clubs and stuff. Mm-hmm. Kaylin writes in, says, can you be a bad friend but a good person? And my answer is, Alice certainly seems to think so.
Oh, my God.
Just kidding. I love you so much. I love you so much.
I'm
You're
both...
wearing your pink socks today.
Yeah.
It's terrific. Your leopard print pants.
I'm a really good friend.
I think you are a really good friend. There's things I've told you in moments we've had together where I'm like, this is pretty uncommon in a lot of my friendships, but I feel a lot of safety and security.
Yeah.
You have an energy. Our friendship has an energy that I don't have with any of my other friendships.
Thank you.
Which is like...
Thank you.
Like a lot of security, but mixed in with me like constantly auditioning for you in mm-hmm. a way.
That's interesting.
Is
it's
what
like
it
I'm
feels
your boss.
Like. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's like I'm the Meryl Streep in Devil Wears Prada.
Can you be a bad friend but a good person? I'm not sure what that's getting at in the...
Yeah.
Oh, I guess it's like because she was a bad friend to Imogen.
Mm-hmm.
Imogen in this episode. Is Mitch so a good person? I think you can... what's something? Either I saw Demi write this out or this is a BoJack quote. I don't know what. This is something... But the idea of like no one's a good person, but we're all trying to be good people, and people who are trying to be good people are often make mistakes and are bad in certain roles. Like you can try to be a good person and still be a bad friend at the same time.
Right.
Good person is such a judgment call. It's so absolute.
I just said me too to that for some reason.
You did?
But yes, that's what I have a problem with. Like if somebody's a good friend, wouldn't we just say that's their qualifier for being a good person? Why is there...
This is a good question, though. I like this question.
It actually,
a lot.
For me, it reminds me of what we're going through with all these like Democratic politicians, people who do progressive things, especially for an Al Franken, somebody mm-hmm. who does things on behalf of women, especially poor or marginalized women, in a general way, whether they're in office, using their power to help like the larger. Humanity, and then while in their private life, using their power in a different way to benefit themselves and hurt others. It's just an interesting question that I'm writing many books about.
Many, many books.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I would ever think of myself as a good person, though. And maybe that's messed up. I think I'm valuable, but I don't think, like, I am a good person.
I don't think about it.
Because it makes it seem like you've arrived. And it's like, yeah.
It's something that pre-sobriety I used to think about a lot. Like, oh, God, am I a bad person? Am I a good person? And now I don't think about that anymore because I think about, what am I doing? You know what I mean? It always comes down to actions rather than thoughts. So if I'm constantly thinking about whether or not I'm a good or bad person, it's going to become really – I'm not going to be a lot of use for a lot of people. And I'm – at the end of the day, if I'm being useful with my time to others, then who cares if I'm a good person
They call that the art of self-forgetfulness, where it's like you just kind of pull your head out of your own butt and just like focus on others, focus on positive impact. Mm-hmm. And don't, like, torture yourselves with the existential questions. Mm-mm. Simone asks, what are your most horrifying and or memorable bad accommodation experiences? Avneet says, what have been your best and worst accommodation experiences while on tour? Kind of the same question. Mm-hmm. I remember when we went to Boston, I got an Airbnb that was horrible in Boston. I got there. And it was like in this super tall building. It was my first time in Boston. I got there at like 11 o'clock at night. There was like yellow splash stains on the wall and mold kind of coming out of the plug sockets on the wall. And the guy asked for a cash bonus when I got there or something where it's like, there's like a fee for this. That wasn't a part of the Airbnb thing, so I guess they couldn't take a percentage of it. I got the hell out of there so quick. I was like, I cannot stay here. It was a cot. It felt like a prison. So I got out of there and spent probably too much on a hotel, but I had to get out of there. That was probably the worst one. I had pretty good experiences with like podcast tour stuff. I found some good Airbnbs doing that when I wasn't staying with friends. But that was the worst one. Boston was real bad. And everything was really pricey in Boston, too.
Yeah.
It sucked. Yeah.
And it's also Boston-y.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody likes that.
Hey, come on. Shout out to our Massachusetts listeners.
You guys get it, though, right?
Yeah, you
understand. People are constantly walking into traffic because it's Boston.
Well, they are. I will say our listeners in Boston are wicked smart. They are. No, you laugh about that, but they really are. They chose to spend their time listening to this podcast. I think they're wicked smart.
Why? I used to sleep in airports when I was early touring, often because I didn't want to stay the night in whatever city.
Uh-huh.
So I would sleep in the airport so as to avoid having to, like, I could get a really early flight and I'd have to avoid having to check into a hotel, like a shitty hotel, and then do extra travel. But that was never that bad. Like, it was always like, if I slept in an airport, it's because I had a plan and I had an inflatable bag and I had like I had an inflatable thing, like a cot thing and a little sleeping bag and eye mask. I had like a whole system worked out and it was really comfortable. And I just like made a little cocoon for myself and I slept like a fucking baby.
If you're planning on it and it's not something you have to do out of necessity, then I'm sure it's a whole different experience.
It was great. Yeah. I would do it again. But
let's do it tonight.
You know what?
Hey.
Why not?
It's Valentine's Day.
It's perfect.
It's when you tell the truth.
Hold on, I'm just going to...
Like in Love Actually. Valentine's Day means you tell the
when
truth.
When you tell the truth. Let me just call Garrett.
You know, Keira Knightley is 17 years old in that movie. She's so young.
Love Actually?
Yeah, she's 33 now. The movie came out in 2003. Doing the math.
Shut up. 17?
Yeah, she's like super young.
And she was playing a full-grown adult?
Yeah.
Because she's so strangely tall.
Yeah. She's not old. She's just tall.
So, and then one time I stayed in a Airbnb and I had a cold. Mm-hmm. So that already sucked. And it was like an Airbnb that I thought was a full house rental. And it was the rental of a room. And the weird part about it was next to the bedroom of the people who lived there. Like they had a Airbnb bedroom that they rented out that was right next to their bedroom.
Ooh, I've done that where I've stayed in a room in someone's house, but not right next to their room.
Like, I've done it before. I did it once in Queens.
Yeah.
And it was this really adorable little family, like a mom and daughter or whatever, and they had a room that was off their living room. Mm. And it was like, fine. You know, it had its own little bathroom, whatever. Made sense. So it made sense to be an Airbnb. This was like their kid.
Next
their kids should live there.
To the bedroom.
And they were also burners. So it was really weird.
Hmm.
And I had to leave.
Yeah.
Because I had a cold and I was like, I just didn't want to like be in these people's houses when I was sick.
Storm.
It was a perfect storm.
Carrie asks, if he's going to be supportive, come to Midge's rescue and acknowledge how talented she is, why can't Joel just get over himself and be her husband?
Great question.
Or was this just a way for him to play nine shining armor and feel good about himself? I just can't tell what we're doing here. I might like for them to be friends and could see that working, but for now there are too many longing looks and speeches about being forgiven for that to happen. What do you guys think?
Interesting. Yeah. I like that perspective a lot because it is... Joel's so extra and so dramatic and so egotistical that I completely agree. He has not redeemed himself enough to be forgiven. And if he can't get over himself enough to
be like his catchphrase this season, can we be forgiven?
Right. It's just, and then the whole thing about how he's like, I can't be the joke of your, that seems made up. If you're looking at the way he's actually behaving, he's so supportive of her career. He knows he's still in love with her. He only wants to hang out with her all the time. So like, why? I don't think she deserves better.
Oh, they deserve each other in some
ways. Yeah, she's not that great. She isn't. She's like kind of shitty.
There was a few moments in this episode where she just had like a few little razzle dazzle exit lines from the scene or when she was leaving the room where I'm like, you're starting to, and I didn't really ever feel this with other characters, like other protagonist characters, where I'm like, you're starting to great,
yeah,
in a way that is new for me.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was never like Lorelai's canceled or anything, but it's like this is a little. And I've had friends text me apropos of nothing. I'm like, I couldn't get through season two of Maisel because she was too annoying.
Yeah, I see that. It's not like it's just repetitive and like it gets a little one note.
Right. Like this podcast sometimes.
Oh my God, Kevin. Well, that's a great place to end.
No, we got four more questions.
Me trying to end in the middle. All right, go for it.
That's a great place to end. I don't have any more questions.
Oh, really?
No. There was one.
Oh, I thought you were serious.
One we had from Pooja that said, did you find there to be parallels between Midge needing Joel to bail her out of trouble and Lorelai calling on Chris, which we kind of talked about.
Oh, yeah.
It was definitely it.
Yeah.
No mention of Benjamin in this episode.
That was, yes. I saw another, yeah, that was the tweet that I responded to about like whether or not Benjamin was just out of the
Shazam.
Picture now.
Dr. Yeah.
Shazam. Yeah. Yeah. They just completely dismissed Dr. Shazam. Obviously, Shazam would have been the person to call.
Which is like a telling character thing that she's not concerned at all with him or what he's doing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, is it, or is it the writers forgot that they wrote this character? Do you know what I mean? Like, I just felt like this episode was a bit of a mess, to be honest.
I was confused by this episode, but I couldn't tell you exactly why I thought it was bad.
Yeah.
I don't even know if it was bad. It was just like, it just felt strange and kind of hazy. And I think this is like, I've just come to accept on this show, anything that Amy herself doesn't write is it's a step below.
Interesting.
It is a step below. There's never been a Daniel episode where it's like, this is better than something Amy could have done.
Mm-hmm.
It's always, even if it's a minor step below. So this was a few steps below, I thought. And
I'm imagining Kate getting yelled at by Amy, like after it comes out.
Can you imagine? She's probably like this amazing writer, this accomplished playwright, and just getting railed on by.
Well, she wasn't here.
The Babadook of Brooklyn.
Yeah. Ride my show.
Paladino.
Paladook.
Hey, come check out.
Paladook.
Paladook. Amy Sherman Paladook.
Yeah, that's it.
Come check out Maisel Goy's live. March 23rd at the Dynasty Typewriter in Los Angeles, California.
March 23rd, Dynasty Typewriter. Wear your petticoats.
The dress code is for real.
Yeah, because Jamie Flam is going to fucking dress up, you guys. He's the guy who books the shows. And his co-producer is also going to be dressing up. They're some snazzy,
snappy. Did you talk to them about it?
No, they just always do anyway.
Like that Vista
I want
manager.
Everybody to pretend you're Paul F. Tompkins, okay? Like, and just... and just dress up.
You can follow Alice at Alice Wareland everywhere. Listen to Treks and The City. You can follow me at Kevin T. Porter everywhere. Thanks for doing the solo pod with me.
I love you, Kevin.
No guest. I love you a lot, too. Let's go out with Someday, the Stroke song.
That they ended the...
That ended the episode.
Yeah. I think this was tonally apt.
Yeah.
Because the whole episode is like, what?
I like it. I like that they're A Knight's Tale in all their endings. The anachronisms of it all. It's very fun.
They're A Knight's Tailing.
They're A Knight's Tailing. Hey, Alice, I love you.
Love you. Guests, we love you.
I'm sorry I dismissed your complaints of saying it's just a TV show. I didn't mean to diminish your thoughts.
I'm sorry I said fuck you when you made me say March.
I just wanted to... Well, I cut that out, but...
Okay.
All right, we'll see you next week on Maisel Coys. Bye.
Bye. That was a HeadGum Podcast.